You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. If you'd like to help me keep this show alive, I'm going into my eighth year of free internet broadcasting, so please go to www.afiresidechat.com and click on the donation button. Tonight, I'm excited to have one of my favorite guests return to the show, Dr. Carmen Bolter. Carmen is the director, producer, and writer of the award-winning DVD, The Pyramid Code. Her five-part, two-DVD set has been aired in 27 countries and is scheduled to air in 26 more around the world. She is also the author of Angels and Archetypes, an evolutionary map of feminine consciousness. With a lifetime of scientific research and teaching as a professor at the University of Calgary under her belt, Carmen is one of the most knowledgeable scholars on Egypt alive today. To find out more, go to her website, www.pyramidcode.com. So let's welcome her back to the show now. Hi, Carmen. How are you?
I'm great. Hi, Lance.
You know, one of the most interesting and exciting projects that I've heard about in a long time is the work you're doing to bring education to the world through the Interactive University. Would you like to tell us more about that tonight?
It's actually interactive-u.com. And
okay.
It's been in development for three years. And, of course, I've been teaching in this way for 14 years. And so it's an online learning and social action network. Better to be seen than described, because it takes a lot of words to show how, you know, you can click and get it better on the website, which happens to be down at the moment, but it's it'll be back up shortly. And so we've got 9 faculties and 31 courses, and there are interactive processes that go with each, and there's a social action component with each. So it's really about self-reflection, learning to collaborate and do teamwork, and then creating something that can be brought into the world. And what a lot of all university and education seems to do is block our creativity. It's the one right answer method. The teacher has the right answer. You're supposed to guess what it is. You get punished through poor marks if you don't get it. And it's instead of finding the right question and being able to be constructivist. So typical education critiques Shakespeare, deconstructs a poem, as opposed to making something, which is meaning-centered and starting with what you already know. So Interactive U is cross-disciplinary, and what you find in most universities is everything is segregated. It is intergenerational, which means any age can attend, from 8 to 80. And it's all multimedia, and so it's appealing to auditory, visual, kinesthetic cues. And it's interactive and it's online. So I'm very pleased with the results of what we've got, and it's very exciting, because the opportunity is that students will be able to create media, do original research, produce a book. There's various certificate programs that allow you to do those sorts of things. There's one on consciousness science, secrets of the ancients. And students will be able to learn how to do credible empirical research and then publish their materials to what we call on stage, to be on stage and then get a pay-per-view. If it's up to the quality that we're looking for, students can actually fund their own education through creating projects and putting them on the Interactive U server if they're accepted. And so that's really exciting. We've got the prices down to 10% of what they used to be of a university course that I taught at the University of Calgary were $1,111. I've created these courses so I can run them through this system, and we're charging $129 per course. So I know that people want things to be free online, but if you go to the free university offerings, you won't get the interactivity or the support, the one-on-one support that's needed to be able to fulfill some of these projects. So there's a lot of people who've dropped out of school because they can't afford tuition. They don't quite finish their dissertation. They've been out of school for a long time, and they want to find a way to come back. And so this is really flexible and individualized in a way that I think it'll meet the needs of a lot of people.
Well, you know, this really sounds like the way of learning and teaching of the future, that you're really creating a ground paradigm for putting the excitement of learning and creating something really that people can get enthused about, and that it's a whole different process than the process that's going on now. What are some of the major flaws in the teaching in teaching today, from your perspective as an educator?
Well, in face-to-face teaching, the student gets ready, drives, parks, goes to the classroom, I'm talking university, and gets there and basically takes off their coat and sits down and says, okay, I've done my part, you're at the front, teach me. And a lot of times the class is about the project that the student's going to do, and then they've got to go home and do it. And I think that all of that is a real waste of effort, and the model of one person instead of two teachers, team teaching, I've seen that work. And the idea that the hierarchy gets established, that the teacher is the one who knows, and if you're sitting down, you don't know. And I've even seen New Age, teachers basically assume that because they're standing at the front, they know, and the people sitting down don't know. They don't make an assumption that people could be really well-read. And I think that what happens with online learning is I call it flattens the hierarchies. So if students ask each other questions, then one student who has some information can share it with the other, and they put their teacher hat on. And so the hierarchical way isn't empowering. Now, in elementary and high school, what you've got is a whole bunch of announcements that come over the intercom, which is very, very disruptive. The classes are 50 minutes in length or however long they are, and the bell goes and you've got to stop. If you finish your homework, you're not allowed doing anything else. You're not allowed walking down the hall. So it really is, the highest value is obedience and conformity. All of the programs that were servicing high needs children, even if it was gifted programs, are getting cut. Music's getting cut. And so students are left with math being math and English being English and being forced to do the one thing that the teacher wants, and like I said before, to guess what the right answer is or the right way is, and often they're not told, but if they don't do it, they lose marks. So the idea that you can get lost in your learning and when you need a break, you get up and go outside, isn't accommodated. You have to go outside when they tell you, even if you're doing something, And if you're doing something, it's just all wrong. It's all wrong. And it's more and more about control and preparing people for a manufacturing kind of industrial life where they have to obey and show up on time and punch the clock and all of that. But that's not serving us anymore. Now, the other thing is the huge amount of student loans and the compounded interest that are turning students into debt slaves, but then they're waiting... Mm-hmm. They're waiting to get a job. They're looking and looking to get a job. So now, because there's so many university graduates that are looking for jobs anywhere, they're ending up in the service industry and fast food. And the ones who have university degrees are getting the degrees. And the people who don't have them are having a hard time getting a job, where that's all backwards. And they're never going to be able to pay off the loans doing that. Now, what I'm teaching people, being cross-disciplinary and individuated, is the idea of what if there is no job? What if you have to find your own passion, identify your strengths and weaknesses, and find a way to build an e-commerce website that will help you support yourself? And if no one comes along that's going to give you a job, you can earn money because you figured out what you're good at and how to market that. That's much more useful. And I always wondered, even as a little girl, why they didn't teach us to balance our checkbook, for example, which we had in those days, and things that were practical. I couldn't understand, if school was supposed to prepare us for life, why life skills didn't come into the equation. And that's because there's a different agenda. And that the paradigm needs to shift.
Yes, absolutely right. And unfortunately, there's a lot of mind control going on, and it seems as if we're all in a kind of stupor, which is related to the many areas that we're dumbed down from with various frequency assaults. Now, an example is one of my guests can't be under fluorescent lights, and she simply gets extreme migraines and has to leave the room. And there is now ample evidence that Wi-Fi is wreaking havoc with our minds. What's your experience, and what are you seeing going on around you?
Well, first of all, I'm one of the people that had a really hard time with fluorescent lights. And where are they? At school. In university. And I'm one of the people who lined up for Wi-Fi way back 15 years ago. And many people are just, you know, catching on now or in the recent 5 years. And so I thought Wi-Fi was the greatest thing until I realized that I was suffering from signs of slight radiation poisoning, and then I thought it had to do with traveling so much because I took 44 flights last year and 6 in January. So in 13 months, I actually ended up taking 50 flights. And so, you know, you get exposed to all these vibrations, and it was really seriously attacking my adrenal glands, and I had all the symptoms, blurry vision, cramping in the legs, headaches. It just went on, insomnia being the biggest one. And so everyone is energy sensitive, but a lot of people don't know how to differentiate. Now, if you live in an apartment building with 60 units, you've got probably maybe 60 Wi-Fis going on, crisscross correlating. And now with the smart meters, that is absolutely damaging to the health. And it's very unpopular to talk about it, you know, and so it's interesting that you're asking me this. But, you know, if you go to a social event and mention anything like, oh, no, I really like my iPad. I know, I do too. I like my iPad too.
Right.
But if it's damaging to our health, I think that we really have to look at it. And it's interesting, the lag. Like, I always wondered why they didn't have it in school sooner without realizing that they had done the studies and then they hid them. But when you say mind control, it is a way that it is affecting people's ability to focus and it's really, really dangerous. So, but what I'm noticing, though, is as chemtrails meets fluoride, meets aspartame, meets all this, and then the stress, the systemic distress that people have from their standard of living going down, utilities going up, you know, they say we don't have inflation, but they're only measuring the price of a toaster at Walmart. They're not measuring food, gas, and utilities. That doesn't go into what creates inflation. So we have all this cognitive dissonance. They're telling us the stock market recovered, and that's another story altogether, and that there's a recovery, and there isn't. So people are lost inside, well, why is my life so difficult? But there really are forces that are making it difficult to think straight. And I'm noticing a lot of people lose nouns. So they'll say, we went to the, and then they can't remember the name of where they went or what it was. And I say that, and I'm not the only one saying it, I think that's brain damage. And
yes.
So, you know, Abraham Maslow talked about the hierarchy of needs. And if we, you know, we're struggling over food, clothing, and shelter, it's pretty hard to address self-actualization. And, you know, there's a lot in the collective that has been orchestrated over a long period of time. And this is only in the last 100 years or so. So we had Freud's nephew, Beret, who coined the phrase public relations. And the idea was that if you repeated something often enough, people would believe it. And if you told them that they needed certain items and they had to buy them, they would start being consumers, and that these sorts of systems are willing to wait over several generations in order to be fully implemented. And so people are completely stricken by what's called cognitive dissonance. So if you watch CNN for 5 minutes, you'll hear contradictory stories. And so people just give up. I mean, including, okay, how about this for an example? Today, it snowed in Cairo for the first time in 100 years. They're going on about global warming, and if you say, yeah, well, it's actually a mini ice age. Everywhere is cold. There may be a couple of places here and there that occasionally are warm, but by and large, the world is a colder place than it used to be. And so if you say, yeah, global warming, they'll say climate change. Well, that's also a form of cognitive dissonance. They change their mind, except no one's saying it's cold.
Right.
And it is. It's colder for all of us. It's snowing where it shouldn't be snowing. And so we're basically living in this whole backwards society that is, society may be advanced, but everything is backwards. We're being told one thing and it means something else. And I think, and Barbara Henklow in your last show said it too, that people are confused. She gave an astrological reason for that. And that's also figuring into the equation because we have to look at everything that's going on. But I think people are not as productive as they used to be. I don't think they're as creative as they used to be. And they're basically getting through the day. And I say that is absolutely tragic.
Well, yes, and one of the things that you're pointing out is that people are going for sound bites. They want to feel good. And so there's this kind of Disney-esque feel-good, end-of-the-movie kind of quality to life that is completely skewed, and a friend of mine calls it living in opposite land.
Well, that's a good way to put it, but also Disney and short TV shows, you have to solve all the problems of the world in half an hour. Everything is instant, one-hour dry cleaning, everything's fast, and it takes away that a natural sense of development of reality, real things. And TV is all about telling you what is.
Right.
And
people
even,
believe it.
Well, and
I
well,
mean,
they do
you see
because
it on television.
It's exactly, and it's repeated over and over again. I've got a couple of examples here. I was invited to a dinner party, actually, because the hostess wanted me to fix her iPad, and it happened to be all 70-year-olds. And as we sat around the table, my eyes widened because everything that came out of their mouth was something they had heard on TV.
Wow.
And I thought, oh my God,
wow.
they have no idea what's, and they were all medicated too, right? And the mixed cocktail. And so here they were, and they were, you know, not a threat to anything at all, moving along in their nice little world, agreeing with one another because they all watch the same news. And I felt myself sitting there going, oh my God, like I'm literally in another reality.
Yeah, right.
That's one example. The other example is because of the success of the Pyramid Code, I've been approached by agents from networks, and they
from the
want,
Matrix.
Yes, and they're interested in my next project, and so we spent weeks with them asking me to write versions and another version and illustrate this thing, which is now a far cry from what I had started with. But then after I submitted it, and they said they were going to accept it, they turned around and turned it into a Disney thing, changed all the facts. Disconnected everything to have the characters, you know, not be connected to the truth. And then they wanted me to illustrate it, and there were no illustrations because everything I was doing was grounded in reality, in real artifacts that have been found. And they had to get a graphic artist to do it. And basically, you know, what they're doing is they're taking my real research, cutting-edge stuff, using little tidbits from books from way before, and scrambling it all, you know, turning into the blender, and it pops out like Disneyland.
Wow.
And that's
that
disheartening.
Must be
yes. Because
well,
okay,
yes.
In university, if you're getting a PhD, they tell you to hedge, which means you say, from the data we have now, it seems that there's a relationship, a connection to this. You never say it is, because you don't know what's going to come up in 20 years that's going to contradict your research. So you say, this is what we do know, this has been shown this way, at this probability that it didn't happen by accident, right? But if you try to do that and you're writing for TV, networks don't like it when you hedge, you have to say, it is. So this gives people the idea that everything on TV is true. And so I'm seeing the mechanism, but the most horrifying thing is that truth is not a value. They don't care if it's true. If you're at a dig and you want the answer to be this, well, we'll just tell everybody that's what happened.
Right.
And it's like, that is the most frightening thing. But that's what's happening at school, too. Most textbooks are information from 20 years ago, but there's an agenda. There is the official story, and that's what the Pyramid Code is confronting, is the official story that you learn in school about Egypt isn't true, and here's why, and here's the evidence. And as the indigenous wisdom keeper Hakim on the Pyramid Code said, it's not fair to deny what you can see and touch with your own hand.
Right, right. Well, that's kind of similar to telling people, you know, that there are chemtrails in the sky, and there have been for maybe 15 years or longer. And when you point, you have them look up and they can see the crisscross marks in the sky, they say, oh, those are contrails. And nobody wants to do the research, and people don't want to know the truth.
Well, it's painful. And one of the ways that I've come to understand it is we have a window of tolerance. And so if you see the baby seals getting hurt and wailing off the Galapagos Islands when you have to wear little booties on the island to protect the environment, and they're killing a whale right over there, and all the different things, you know, how the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, and slavery and, you know, body mutilation, it's like people just shut down. Like, there are people, which is very surprising to me, that think the government's out to help us and that they would never do anything to hurt us. And if they say that radiation is safe and your microwave is safe, it's safe. They said so.
Oh, geez.
And they're not looking to see how the studies were skewed and hidden and how people were killed. I mean, it makes us sound totally paranoid, but it's the facts are the facts. And
right.
Either you put your time in and you research it or you don't. But what's true is if somebody hasn't heard it before, they balk at it. Now, Jung, who was a colleague, well, a student of Freud, he broke away and started talking about very difficult concepts like the collective unconscious and projection, which take a while to understand. But the idea is that the collective is the matrix, I suppose, as you say, where let's just imagine people are all standing on an area rug, and these are the beliefs that you're supposed to have, that everybody has to go to school, that school is good, the government's there to protect you, you have to pay your taxes, taxes go into making the world better, all that.
Right.
So if somebody says, wait a minute, I think my taxes are going to pay interest over there and it doesn't have anything to do with the park bench or the roads, and they step off that carpet into a realm that is out of the collective, well, the people in the collective will say, no, you can't step over there. Yes, taxes are good. Get back over here. And so everyone within that construct helps to police everyone who's trying to step out of it. So if interactive view is off the carpet, the idea of cutting chemtrails and understanding what they are is off the carpet. And so when we're trying to say this, you know, even that's why I said it's better if people go click on interactive view and find out for themselves. We haven't quite launched. We're very close. But, you know, there's still some configuring to do, but it's been a long time coming, and we're very close. But anyway, if I talk to people about it, notably in my family, and they'll say, well, what do you mean there's no test? How are you going to evaluate someone? And they just can't conceptualize. You know, and
well,
so if they haven't seen it before, it doesn't exist.
Yeah, right, right. Well, you know, that's an example of meme control, too. You brought up something interesting recently, that everybody learns differently, and some people learn through sight, others through sound, others through touch or taste, that there are different forms of learning, and that it's important to learn to be able to discern those things in the teaching process.
Right.
How does interactive view address that?
Well, I noticed that I've got 14 years of using this material and hundreds of pages of research on how and why this works in terms of learning theory. And there's three basic learning modalities: visual, auditory, and kinesthetic. But you can be vis-kin, as I say, so both visual and kinesthetic. But what the computer does, because you're looking, you're hearing, and your hand is on the mouse or the trackpad, you're doing something. That's the kinesthetic part. You get all those modalities. There's another way of thinking about it as well, through multiple intelligences. And this is Gardner's work. And so there's musical intelligence, interpersonal, intrapersonal, mathematical intelligence, and it goes on like that. And so if you understand how you learn best, you can feed those modalities. But I've also done studies with students who are a little weak in certain things, but if you give them multimedia, they all those levels come up. And so if you think of a kid in the Sudan, they have tribes there, and you can't marry somebody within your tribe. There's 12 tribes. And so if you want to be able to speak to your relatives, you need to speak 12 languages pretty much, right? And so they don't learn them reading and writing. They just learn them verbally. So in other words, a Sudanese child is brilliant at languages, but only the spoken word. So we get them into an English as a second language classroom here, and they want to fail them because they can't write. But if you, and they're all kinesthetic, so they like to drum and dance. Well, if you taught them through hip-hop or, I'm forgetting the word, of when they just rap, and get them to beat the drum, these kids are going to be the stars of the class, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so once they're confident and they've gotten certain skills, then you can slowly introduce the other ones if you insist that they learn the other things. But really, instead of just, you know, slandering the child and failing them and telling them they're stupid, which you don't have to be told that too many times before you get poor self-esteem, we just go about it all wrong. And so in China, it's basically the teacher at the front of the class reading out of a book, and so everyone's more auditory, but all those students are going to be individualized. So if they can, you know, mix it up and use multimedia, they start to excel. And so the thing about our system is it wants everybody to be the same. It wants to group everyone and streamline and standardize. But no one's standardized. Everybody has gaps in their learning, and everybody needs individual attention. And so the system doesn't like that because they want to put as many students in the classroom as possible, and then they want to use multiple choice. Every question is debatable. Answer is debatable, A, B, C, D. But then you put the little mark and you put it in the machine, and then the teacher gets to send the marks to the government to say, see, we're doing well. But none of that's working at all. And one of the ways that I stumbled upon all of this is I was working as a professor in Taiwan, and I was teaching in English. And the thing is you can pass the test and take English for 10 years, and you still can't order lunch, and you're too scared to tell someone what your name is. Because so the test-driven system makes you pass tests. It doesn't teach what you have to know. And so I started to, you know, work backwards from the mistakes they were making in their writing and devising things that could solve individual, we call it first language bleed-through. So if verbs don't conjugate in Chinese, then you're going to have trouble with conjugation. So how can you target that particular difference in English? And so that's where I came up with all these methodologies for teaching, and it worked beautifully. But that, initially, it's totally daunting. You know, for now I've been, and then I went to the University of Calgary. I was hired from Taiwan to come and put the entire Masters of English as a Second Language online, 12 courses. And I taught my students to teach paperlessly and to use multimedia. Well, at first, they were gasping with fear, and then they realized that this is the coolest thing going, and once you understand how to go into the different methodology, you know, instead of, you know, photocopies and you know, the worksheet methodology, you can really do interesting things. And another example of that is I was asked to evaluate a program at Thompson Rivers University, their ESL program there, and they were all lamenting that they couldn't afford another staff and that if they had another professor, it would really help them. And then I realized in the week-long evaluation that they were spending $52,000 a year on photocopying.
Oh, geez.
Which is the salary of a person.
Wow.
So I said, go paperless and hire somebody.
Right.
Right? And that's entirely possible. But it takes a while, and it takes modeling. My research of the uptake of technology is you can't. I thought that if you had enough hardware, software, and support, that you know people would adopt technology. But the people sitting right next to me, the teachers, you know, they didn't know that we had hardware, software, and support. I knew we had it, and I was using it. But what it takes is modeling over a long period of time. Look what I did with my grade 7 social science class. You want to use it, kind of thing. And so, and teachers are among the, you know, the most traditional, and the idea is the student doesn't know, so you can't learn from the kids about technology or let them figure out how to plug in the, you know, the computer in the big screen, you know, because the teachers are supposed to be the ones who know. So it's really turning everything upside down, and most people don't want to do it. They don't want to make the effort. They think it's really cool, but if you say, well, it's multimedia, well, does that mean I have to, you know, be on video? I don't know how to do that. Well, everybody's got a device in their pocket, you know, an iPhone or whatever that they, and it's easy. Like people say, oh, I don't know how to, Skype is hard, I don't know how to do it. Well, all that means is they didn't try, because you realize, you know, the green button that looks like a pick up the phone and the red one that looks like you're hanging it up, pretty straightforward. That, and I picked up on that a long time ago. That when people say it's difficult, they never tried. But they're scared to try. And now, because everybody's, you know, got YouTube in every sentence, you know, I think people feel a little embarrassed if they didn't get on the wagon. It's not that it's difficult. It's that if everybody's doing the same thing, and that's the culture that you're in, you just start doing it.
Yep.
So there's a way to make that bridge. And because I've had a lot of experience teaching this way, I see that when people get involved in it, it's just they just really go fast in terms of being excited, getting results with their students, and feeling happier about the whole thing.
Well, now, I'm really excited about what you're talking about. And is there a website that people can go to?
Yeah, it's interactive-u.com.
Okay, so interactive-u.com, because there are I looked it up, and there are a lot of misleading sites. One takes you to a Christian site, and I just want to make sure that we get that information out on the air so that people can find it.
Yeah, and now, give it a few days, because even though we've got 6 levels of encryption, we got hacked. And through some Russian something or other, and so we're going through all the logs, and it won't happen again. We've got a fix for it now. But we have to rebuild part of it, and that's part of why I didn't launch, is I wanted to make sure that we were through, you know, every bell and whistle and possibility. So it may still take us another month or two to open the courses, but we're planning on opening registration quite soon. But like I said, it's never been done before, literally. It's never been, what we're doing and the way we're doing it has never been done before, even if you've taken a course online. But most online learning is uploaded paper, right? It's not true multimedia. So that's the address, interactive-u.com.
Now, another subject that I wanted to touch on, and we don't have a lot of time left, is that I've told other people this, and I'm very sincere in that you're one of the few people that I would make an effort to go to Egypt with, because you are probably, I mean, you just have the ability to take people in and to teach and share and inspire. And you've been doing this, you've been taking people to Egypt for over 28 years, I believe. And what is going on with that? Because I know that we listen to the news, and we tend to believe that, oh, there are problems over in Egypt, and don't go now. What's really going on, and what's the status of your trips there?
Okay, it's time to go back. I've planned a trip for April and September. Again, I've just requested the itinerary. That'll be posted on pyramidcode.com shortly. I started going over there in 77, and people were saying, no, don't go, and started leading groups in 96. I've been to Egypt personally 28 times. I lived over there. They have been drumming up this thing, this fabricated fantasy, fear, and even whatever happened in the revolution. I was talking to people on the ground there practically every day, and they were fine. There were a few demonstrations, but not what they were showing, and the people were unified in peace. And it really, really, and there were all kinds of fake pictures, things that were impossible, and I've got a really keen eye, you know, grainy footage from another country in another time frame to try to show, and repeat, you know, and false, okay, ketchup, and people pouring ketchup on people and then taking pictures of them, and really staged. And all the way through that Mubarak thing, they were blaming people for stealing things out of the museum when they were stealing them. So there's lawsuits and all kinds of things going on for how that, you know, how Mubarak and Zahi Hawass and everything were really making mistakes, and they're getting a comeuppance because of that. And so it's safe, and there are a tremendous number of new finds. Klaus Dana, who's got the whole thing on hidden mysteries, has got a scanning technology, and they have found new tombs in the Valley of the Kings and a long shaft that's 140 feet deep underneath the Red Pyramid that's unopened, and they can see that there's artifacts and bones in there. And so this could be a real resurgence of Egypt. But the energy of the pyramids and the place itself and the true history and the sacred geometry inside the temples has an effect on the human psyche. And I've managed to measure this through electrophotonic imaging. And
it's real.
And so people can get an awful lot, and they can move into a state of empowerment. And it seems that there's a real concerted effort to stop that from happening. So even the people who feel the calling to come to Egypt have someone in their family who goes, no, no, didn't you watch TV? And I am sick of it because there's nothing, it's safe, it's fine. And anybody who gets there, you know, I always ask them when we do our first orientation meeting when we get there, does anybody feel afraid? And they go, no. And even when I was there and they started some kafui when we were down in Aswan, and someone went to the, we were sitting up on the roof having a happy hour, looking at the Nile, 180-degree view, and someone went down to the lobby and checked their email, and they said, guess what, the revolution's happening again, and we're all like, if that's what the revolution is, I'm in. So really, it's such a concerted effort, and I mean, I'm not going to tell you, I know Egypt, I'm not going to say Jordan, Syria, whatever, like I can't be sure about any of those other places. But Egypt is, I'm absolutely certain that it's fine. If you ask William Henry or other people who travel there often, they'll tell you it is fine.
Well, you're the person to go with, and you often get into places that basically other people can't get into, like booking the Great Pyramid on 12/12 and so on. Now, you mentioned measuring devices, and I know that you have a device that measures frequencies and in the quantum field. Would you like to share a little bit more about that, and what are you doing with it, and how are you testing it and providing scientific data that develops that information?
Okay. There's two names for the technique, gaseous discharge visualization, GDV, and electrophotonic imaging, EPI, GDV, EPI. And it was invented by Konstantin Korkov, a very prolific scientist and writer in Russia. And it's souped up Carillion photography on steroids.
I mean,
what it's measuring is the photonic emission off the fingertips, which is connected to the whole body. So then it uses the meridians in the Chinese system to logarithmically place where the energy points come off the fingers. So you're literally putting your finger on a photographic plate and covering it so the light doesn't get in. And it sets up with this little electronic impulse. And there's places where there's gaps, and there's places where there's spikes. And it can show the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual energy, virtual chakras, the alignment, and also the sensitivity of an energy field. So it's measuring consciousness fields and the effect that a place has on a person, on each person. Mm. So I've gotten thousands of readings. I ran a full study in 10-10-10 inside the Great Pyramid, and then I replicated the study. So I did a pretest, and then we did a test right away after somebody had been inside the sarcophagus in the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid for 2 minutes, and then we measured them, and then we measured them after. Then I replicated that study on 12-12 with 80 people and did a delayed post-test. So there were four readings. So I gave the results of them. The first test in the first study in Russia last July, and I just came back from Bosnia at the Hidden Mysteries Conference where I gave the results of the composite study of both of them, and showed how my hypothesis was all about how can we determine if the Great Pyramid has an effect on making us more psychic, because I noticed after spending a lot of time in the Great Pyramid by myself over the years, it seemed to me that there was something about it that was making me more psychic. So I was trying to understand how that worked. Mm-hmm. And so it turns out that the entrainment of the chakras, it's similar to the auditory visual kinesthetic, where we can have synesthesia, where you can hear a picture and see music, and like you said, you know, smell the flowers when you're watching TV kind of thing. It's crossing the senses and giving more perception. So when the chakras are entrained, it's actually, you know, our gut reaction is informing our heart, which our intuition connects to, and our third eye, our crown chakra can, you know, connect to the spiritual energy. So when everything's going loop-de-loop, and because it was an empirical quantitative study, I was able to do a statistical analysis. So not just looking at one person's results, but seeing the trend. And so if the more data you have, the more you can see what the trends are actually doing. And it really is a model for an empowered human. It's simply fantastic.
Wow, that is really exciting. And, of course, you broke the news on my show and probably on other shows as well about the construction of real pyramids today in Russia. and the scientific work that they're doing on that, and how the pyramids can stabilize the field of the globe, and how they connect with the ley lines. That's another thing that, I mean, there's so much of this exciting going on around the world, and we just don't hear about it over here.
No, and that's and even when I'm trying to get that on the TV networks, they want to squash that part because they don't think Russia's got anything. But so Valery Uvarov, he found me because I was speaking in Russia, and there's a project, it's called Project 12, which is basically the 12 domains, agriculture, transportation, education, health, it goes on. And they are replicating Atlantis, so the second name is the New Atlantis. And so they're making a model of the concentric circles with a main pyramid that's already built, four and a concentric circle around it, and four around that, with all the buildings for the agricultural center and the science in there. But concurrently, he had a second project where he took the pyramid energy, he looked at the ancient texts, and figured out what they were saying about the double helix of the quartz under pressure, and what the actual pyramid energy was. And he experimented with this over a number of years, and then actually built this pyramid. But he took the technology and he put it into the walls of this place called the Crystal Spa and Lounge, and it's in St. Petersburg, and it's been open a year. So the whole time with the pyramid and the whole time with the Crystal Spa, they've been measuring what are the effects, and they've been using the GDV-EPI machine as well, as amongst other things. And they have got concrete results about how, you know, just being in the energy lowers blood pressure, does all kinds of things. But I went there. And standing in the, you know, outside and crossing the threshold, taking one step into the building, it felt like being inside the pyramid. If you had blindfolded me and you'd said, "Where are you?" I would have guessed that, you know, it really, really, really is doing something. And I see why. I mean, like, it's complex. It's measurable and it's possible, and it's recorded in terms of, you know, how the Atlanteans were building these pyramids. And most people don't know about that either. You know, and let's turn it into a fantasy when we can have the reality and the real data and the real text. But no, we don't want to do that. But anyway, so they are doing it, and it is absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible and measurable. And that's the thing. To me, you know, you can go on and say, it's true because I said so, all you want. I think we have to respect our audience and give them something concrete and show them how it works and let them decide, but have something that you can measure. Before, during, after, and long term, and over several people, yes, it's actually doing something. Well, the builders, the construction workers in the pyramid, before they even put the casing stones on, they were having spontaneous healings. There was one who had a severe asthmatic condition, and he was standing in the pyramid one day in his, you know, work overalls, and he started to tremble, and half his body broke into a sweat, and he had all these palpitations, and the whole thing ended, and he never needed his inhaler again, and he was completely cured.
Wow. Aren't they also using one of these pyramids in an experiment with children where they're taking non-GMO organic produce, and they're putting it in the pyramid, and then they're feeding it to the children to see what the difference is as they develop?
Well, not quite. GMOs are banned in Russia, and so are microwaves. And there was a request to measure school children within a 20-mile radius of the pyramid, and there's 450,000 of them, and to measure if the pyramid was affecting them. And if I was to do the methodology on that, it would, well, let's go find students somewhere else that don't have a pyramid close to them and see if they're having these same changes. So you'd have to set up the methodology. But the reason that first pyramid was built, it was funded, $5 million project, was funded by the biggest produce company in Russia. And they asked Valery to design a warehouse, something that would energize the food before it got on the trucks in order to enhance the health of the people. And in this pyramid, at the bottom of the pyramid, whatever they do in the other chambers, they actually put the food in there to energize it before it goes on the truck to be delivered.
Wow.
There are no GMOs. And if anybody's caught with a GMO anything in Russia, they just get kicked out. They just have no tolerance for GMOs at all there.
Wow.
And, you know, like people will say, oh, they don't have microwaves. Maybe they'll catch up, you know, as if they're behind. Russia's really advanced. Really advanced, and they know that it's dangerous, and so they just outlawed them. They just don't have them.
Right.
And then we think they're going to catch up and get them. No, we have to catch up and lose them.
They're ahead of us.
Very, very. I was so impressed. But even so, when I came back, you know, I had friends saying, oh, I had a friend of a friend who's, you know, the KGB's hiding behind, oh, they're not as a, they're all, you know, and also CNN mentality, you know, they left you thinking it was old guys in trench coats waiting in line for, in the bread line when there's no bread. Like, they didn't bother to update us, you know, in that now they're supersonic and super advanced and highly educated and multilingual and calm and healthy and beautiful and the architecture is fabulous and the arts are fabulous. It's like, where am I?
Right, right. And over here, everything is going to hell in a handbasket, but everybody thinks it's fabulous because we're all told it is, and we believe it because it's on the television.
Well, okay, there's one more point, that everything that's measured in the States compared to other countries, the States comes out lower in health and education and everything else. The only thing that the States is measured high in is confidence.
Right.
Everybody thinks they're fabulous. And the other,
right.
Yeah, it's just, it's really quite the situation. And if you travel around, you get a different kind of view of things.
Absolutely. Well, Carmen, you know, this is really exciting stuff. And I would love to keep on going in a conversation with you. But I think we're just about out of time. And I'd like you to give people a way to reach you and to connect with your next trip to Egypt, and with Interactive University, and with the exciting projects that you're working on. So before we close, would you please share that information so people can find it?
Okay, so Egypt trips will be April and September. They're 2 weeks long. The itineraries will be posted on pyramidcode.com. And the online courses will be interactive-u.com. And we'll also have socialaction-tv.com, which is going to be a streaming free TV, online TV network as well. And so we haven't talked about the Bosnian pyramids and all of the discoveries that they've made there. Come back from there in September, and that's really remarkable as well. So
our websites will
keep you updated, and if you want to hear about the Bosnian pyramids, if we have more time, I'll tell you.
Yes, absolutely. Would you come back soon, and we'll just do a whole show on the Bosnian pyramids?
Sure.
Okay, wonderful.
There's plenty to say about that, believe me.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Maybe in another month or so.
Sure.
I'd love to have you back. You're always you're way ahead of the cutting edge, and I just admire the work you're doing, and I can't thank you enough for being on the show tonight.
Thanks, Lance.
All right, thank you, Carmen. Good night, everybody.